like to go ahead and call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order at 1:32 in the p.m. Today is Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Present with us today are Representative McCabe, Representative McKay, Representative Drummond, Representative Kronk, Representative Hannon, and myself, Representative Hopkins. If we have anybody participating remotely on phone, which we do, please make sure you mute your microphones when you're not actively speaking, so we can get a clear recording of these proceedings for posterity. I have to say, I think overall the legislature's done a remarkable job of, and all the presenters, a remarkable job of muting themselves on Teams. I haven't had to say it all that many times. For those listening at home, all of today's presentations, as well as background information on Alaska's motor fuel tax, can be found by visiting akleg.gov and entering House Bill 104 into the search bar at the top of the page. Are there any questions before we get on to today's business? Doesn't sound like it. So today's meeting will be about Alaska's motor fuel tax, House Bill 104. We'll start with a quick word from Representative Andy Josephson, the bill's sponsor, followed by a presentation from Deputy Tax Director Nicole Reynolds at the Department of Revenue. Then we will open the floor to questions. Following that, we'll take public testimony and then look for the will of the committee if we want to move on with this bill and allow it to go to finance. Any questions? Thank you. I would like to note for the committee that Department of Environmental Conservation did respond to committee question regarding the Spill Prevention and Response Fund. And that document has been loaded up onto BASIS and is also should be available in your binders. We also have all the fiscal notes as well. One of those is from DEC dealing with that SPAR fund. Representative Josephson, your aide, if you'd like to go ahead and put yourselves on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Josephson. I represent District 17. It's the UMED in Anchorage. I appreciate the committee's hearing this bill for a second time. I appreciate it the first time as well. And I was a supporter of this bill in its previous incarnation or iteration last year, and was sorry that it didn't make it through the process, although it came very close. The bill fundamentally doubles what is a very small tax set in 1970, and in doing so, although the money is designated and not dedicated, it traditionally is used, and I think would be used in the future, for highway improvements and things that make our economy work and run. And I think it's a reasonable fee to pay given the effect of inflation. I noted last week, or when we previously heard the bill, that there was happenstance, a very supportive op-ed that made the case that mileage now is higher, and therefore there's more road miles covered on less tax. And then we also have a diminishing throughput, and that's been a problem as well to help fund this enterprise. And then secondarily, it has the advantage of increasing revenue for the spill prevention response unit, in this case the prevention account. And so I think it's not an unreasonable sum to pay. I noted when I testified before remotely that it would be somewhat more costly for rural than urban Alaskans, but still, I think, manageable. And I ask for your ardent support of it.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, let the record show that at 1:36 in the p.m., Representative Sponholz joined us. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? I have a quick one. Because the spring revenue forecast just dropped into our mailboxes recently, if members of the committee wanted to look at how this is shows up in that booklet, would we find it under designated general funds, undesignated general funds? Do you know where that would exactly show up? And the Department of Revenue might be able to answer that. But I don't need a page. Just wondering, general one.
It should be in designated general funds.
All right. That answers that question. Thank you very much, Representative. If there are no committee questions on this, I would like to go ahead and turn to Nicole Reynolds, Deputy Director of the Division of Tax at the Alaska Department of Revenue, for a presentation on Alaska's motor fuels tax. I'd ask that any members please hold their questions to the end of each slide. And Ms. Reynolds, please let me know when you're done with each slide so I can make sure we hear the chime and move to the next slide. Please put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation.
Great, thank you. I hear a bit of an echo. Do you hear an echo on your end?
No, ma'am, we hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, my name is Nicole Reynolds and I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I am going to present to you a high-level overview of Alaska's motor fuel tax. Before we begin the presentation, I'd like to preface with a disclaimer that I'm not offering tax or legal advice, but rather merely just giving a high-level overview. overview of Alaska's motor fuel tax structure. Individuals who are seeking tax or legal advice are encouraged to consult with their tax representative or tax attorney for specific tax or legal advice. And I'm ready to move on to slide two.
And we're there, thank you.
Great, thanks. This slide shows an overview of the motor fuel tax statutes and regulations. This is where they can be found. I want to point out that motor fuel is defined by statute as fuel used in an engine for the propulsion of a motor vehicle or aircraft, fuel used in or on watercraft for any purpose, or in a stationary engine, machine, or mechanical contrivance, which is run by an internal combustion motor. below that definition, there are the regulations that interpret the motor fuel tax statutes. there's contained in statute, there's a long list of fuel types and uses that are not considered motor fuel and are therefore exempt from the motor fuel tax. For example, fuel sold to federal, state, and local governments for official use is exempt. Fuel used to heat private or commercial buildings or facilities is exempt. Fuel sold or transferred between qualified dealers is exempt. Fuel sold to electric or telephone cooperatives is exempt. Fuel sold by charitable institutions, and also fuel used in flights to and from foreign countries are exempt. certain fuel types and uses are also exempt from the surcharge, but there are some differences. Heating fuel is not exempt from the surcharge, and then exported fuel is not exempt unless it was originally refined outside of the United States. Unless there are any questions on this slide, we can move to the next one.
Doesn't look like it. Please proceed, Director.
Great, thank you. this slide contains a brief history of Alaska's motor fuel tax. Alaska first levied a motor fuel tax in 1945 at a rate of 1 cent per gallon. Although the rates have increased over the years, the basic structure of the tax has remained the same. 1970 was the last time the highway rate was increased. 1977 was the last time the marine fuel rate increased. 1994 was the last time the aviation and jet fuel rates increased. In the late 2000s, the motor fuel tax was suspended across all fuel types for a year due to rising fuel prices. And 2015, HB 158 added a 0.95 cent gallon, cent per gallon surcharge on all refined fuel sold within the state. That's less than a penny per gallon. Refined fuel means fuel produced from oil used in an engine or used to create heat, energy, or power. The surcharge revenue is set aside for appropriation to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Spill Prevention and Response Division. And lastly, in 2019, SB 115 was introduced and was very similar to the current bill before you, but it ultimately died when the House adjourned sine die. And if there are no questions here, we can move on to slide 4.
Please proceed.
Okay, so this slide contains our current motor fuel type or tax rates and surcharge. The highway fuels rate is 8 cents per gallon. Marine fuel is 5 cents per gallon. Aviation fuel is 4.7 cents per gallon. Jet fuel is 3.2 cents per gallon. And then gasohol is either 8 cents a gallon or 2 cents a gallon, depending on the season, location, and EPA mandates. And then again, the surcharge is 0.95 cents per gallon. generally, motor fuel is taxed when it is sold by a qualified dealer directly to a user or to a reseller. Sales between qualified dealers are not taxed. A qualified dealer is a wholesaler or distributor that refines, imports, manufactures, or produces motor fuel, and they must be licensed through the Department of Revenue. Motor fuel is also taxed when it is imported into the state and not sold to a qualified dealer. In other words, persons who first transfer, sell, or use untaxed motor fuel in the state are responsible for paying the tax. In the event fuel is sold and transferred into a common storage tank, which is a storage tank that serves both taxable and exempt uses or multiple taxable uses, the fuel is taxed at the highest tax rate of use, and then the taxpayer may claim a refund if they establish that the fuel was used for an exempt purpose or used for a purpose that would qualify for a lower tax rate than the rate that was paid. Does anyone have questions on this slide?
Yes, Deputy Director. Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. You're familiar with this because you at Revenue work with these minutia details all the time. Could you give us an example of the kind of fuel in that untaxed, delivered into the state, then put into a commingled tax location? So it's bulk fuel, and I guess I'm thinking, is that a seafood processor who's bringing up a large ship and brings fuel for their season, or what? Can you give us an example of what kind of entity that is, just so we can track? Most of these things I can visualize and track, but that one left me confused.
So, and you're specifically talking about the common storage tank?
Well, the last type that you spoke about was you brought in untaxed fuel from another location. And if you were to sell it, you would need to pay the tax on it. But if you were using it yourself, I presume, then you don't have to. But then you might commingle it with taxable fuel in a bulk storage location, and now all must be taxed. So I was just trying to track what those are.
Okay. So I think the most common situation that we see is when people buy fuel that either is going to be used for heating purposes, or they say they're going to use it for heating purposes, or it's going to be used for dual purposes. And so if if the fuel is transferred into a common storage tank and they and the person is going to use it for highway fuel as well as heating fuel, then they have to pay the tax at the highway fuel rate, and then they can apply for a refund where they have to provide substantiation that they in fact used that fuel for exempt purposes like heating fuel. And so that would be a common situation that we see.
Follow up?
Did that answer your question?
Well, it does, but now I guess my question is, so you're using singular pronouns. So we have individual Alaskans who are shipping up bulk fuel that they're going to store and then use some on their own vehicles later on highways. Can you give me a ballpark number of, is this one guy a year or is this 10,000 Alaskans or 100,000 Alaskans?
Well, the term persons is a very broad term. So it includes individuals as well as corporations and other types of entities. So so it's not just individuals who I'm referring to. It can include multiple types of entities.
The one, okay. Mr. Chairman, could you give me an example of a type of business who likely does this on a regular basis and they are filing with you annually, because I just can't visualize it. I'm not doubting you. I'm just trying to understand it.
So it could be like a mining company. Would do something like this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Director Reynolds. We have Representative Sponholz has a question as well.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Reynolds, I think I heard you reference heating fuel both as taxed and untaxed, and could you kind of describe the categories of heating fuel that are taxed and untaxed?
So heating fuel is not taxed, but it is subject to the surcharge.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Director. Any further questions? Looks like not. Representative Drummond does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The surcharge on at the bottom of slide four, does that is that charged on all the types of fuels on that page, including jet fuel?
The surcharge is yes, aviation fuel is subject to the surcharge.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Looks like no. Please proceed on to slide number five.
And actually, I'm sorry. I think I misspoke. The aviation fuel is not subject to the surcharge. I was misreading my slide.
Okay.
I guess Representative Drummond does have a follow-up question then.
Okay, there are five types of fuels listed on that page above the surcharge. Which ones do not get the surcharge? Just aviation fuel or jet fuel also?
Okay. Let me see here. So the statute that that governs the surcharge is 4340.005. So the following types of fuel that are exempt from the surcharge is fuel sold to a federal or state government agency for official use, fuel refined and used outside the United States, liquefied petroleum gas, aviation fuel, and fuel sold or transferred between qualified dealers. So if the fuel does not fit into that those categories, then it is subject to the surcharge. So the highway fuel, the marine fuel, and the gasohol on this slide would be subject to the surcharge.
Representative Drummond.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair. So then aviation fuel and jet fuel are not subject to the surcharge.
Aviation fuel is not subject to the surcharge. And I believe jet fuel would be, but I can follow up with you on that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Deputy Director. Now I think we can move along to page five.
Okay. So this slide gives some information for you about the returns and the tax payments. Returns are filed and taxes paid monthly. Generally, the tax is collected at the time of sale and remitted to the Department of Revenue on the last day of the month following the month in which the fuel was sold or transferred. Taxpayers are required to file and pay online, and they must file a separate return for each type of fuel sold. Taxpayers who timely file and pay their taxes can receive a timely filing credit of 1% of tax and surcharge due, and that's limited to $100 maximum per return. There are four separate returns that taxpayers need to use if they sell this type of fuel. So gasoline, diesel, aviation, and gasohol. Does anyone have questions on this slide?
No, ma'am. Please proceed.
Okay. This slide here just gives you an idea of the number of taxable gallons that have been sold for each fuel type, broken out by the last 4 years. And over the last 4 years, we have seen about a 20 million gallon decline in fuel sold. Does anyone have questions on this slide?
No, Deputy Director, you are free to proceed.
Okay. And then this slide here gives a summary of historic tax collections over the last 4 years with a breakout of the different fuel types and the surcharges as well as penalty and interest, and then where the money goes. So that bottom section, the money is deposited into the general fund. The different fuel types have different accounts within the general fund that the money goes into, but we didn't break that out here. And then aviation tax, 60% of that is refunded to the municipalities that own or lease and operate an airport. Are there questions on this slide?
Nope, please proceed.
And then this slide, slide number 8, just gives kind of a visual diagram of our motor fuel tax collections. And over the past 4 years, we've collected between $28.9 million and $30.5 million. We've seen a slight increase in collections in fiscal year 2020 as compared to fiscal year 2019. And are there questions on this slide?
Still no, Deputy Director. Looks like you made it through mostly.
Got free. Thank you.
At this point, if you're Deputy Director, if you're available to stay online just in case any questions do pop up, that would be appreciated. Before I move along to public testimony, I want to note that we have a number of people from the administration here. If any questions do pop up, we have the Department of Environmental Conservation Admin Services Director, as well as the Admin Services Director for the Department of Transportation. We also have the Department of Motor Vehicles Director, and we have the Director for Aviation, so pretty much all of these fiscal notes as well. And we do have a question from Representative Sponholz.
All right, thank you. Through the chair, I did not know that we had somebody from DOT on the line, and I wanted to ask, looking back to slide 7, it shows that there's been a decline in aviation gasoline. The jet fuel makes sense to me. It's going up because our cargo is going up, but I see aviation gasoline has been sort of steadily declining over the last 4 years, and I'm wondering if they have any information about why that is or explanation.
Mr. Pannone or Mr. Bender, you've been spending a lot of time with us lately. Do you have answers to that question?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, this is John Bender, Deputy Commissioner with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And yes, that has been a trend actually nationwide related to general aviation. Numbers continue to go down as the general aviation pilot population ages and not as many younger folks entering that realm, that the overall usage of aviation gasoline has decreased. That in combination with many of the smaller aircraft as carriers and fleets upgrade to newer aircraft, most of those are more turbine type engines that use jet fuel versus aviation gasoline.
Thank you.
Representative Schrag, you might have some arguments with that age out of piloting, but I understand the logic. Any other questions for any of the administration people? All right. Well, thank you very much. If those of you from the administration could stay on for the remainder of the hearing, that would be much appreciated, just so we can make sure we get any questions answered. At this point, we're going to go ahead and gavel in for public testimony. Public testimony is officially open. To respect everyone's time, it is my intent to limit public testimony to 2 minutes per testifier. So I'll have an alarm here going. If we could please start with Donna Shantz, please put yourself on the record with any affiliations in your name, and please proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Shantz, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. I've worked for the council for over 20 years and currently serve as the council's executive director. Reduced revenue has resulted in a chronic and continuing revenue shortfall for the Oil and Hazardous Substances Release Prevention and Response Fund, also known as the 470 or Oil Haz Fund. This revenue shortfall diminishes the ability of the state to prevent oil spills and hazardous substance releases, maintain an adequate level of readiness, and the ability to respond rapidly should a spill occur in order to protect human health and the environment. The council strongly supports Section 5 of House Bill 104, which includes an increase on the refined fuel surcharge from just under a penny per gallon to 1.5 cents per gallon. The revenue from this increase goes directly into the prevention account within the 470 fund and is necessary in order to close the revenue gap. The 470 fund was designed to be self-sustaining to ensure that the Spill Prevention and Response Division of the Department of Environmental Conservation, or SPAR, has adequate funds on hand for immediate response to oil spills and for maintaining an effective prevention program without the need for annual general fund appropriation. The prevention account, one of two within the fund, provides most of the operational funding for the DEC SPAR division. The SPAR division has absorbed the elimination of 17 positions since 2015, and the governor's FY22 operating budget proposes cuts that would eliminate 5 more positions. The elimination of additional positions will result in increased workloads for employees in many areas of responsibility, including a caseload of over 2,400 active contaminated sites. The division is beyond doing more with less and is now having to make difficult choices about how to do less with less and still meet its statutory responsibilities. For instance, it's the council's understanding that with the additional 5 positions being cut in the governor's FY22 budget, SPAR will have to prioritize contaminated sites, resulting in delays in addressing sites at the bottom of their priority list or perhaps not having some sites addressed at all.
Ms. Johns, you're at about 2.5 minutes. If you could please wrap up so we can proceed, that would be appreciated, but thank you.
Okay. The state must be able to adequately engage in oil spill and hazardous substance prevention activities and robustly respond if pollution occurs, which is critical to protecting the environment, economy, health, safety, and welfare of Alaskans. So that concludes my testimony. I cut it short. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johns. I appreciate that. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next up, we have Mako Haggerty. Please state your name and any affiliations, and please proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, I just want to weigh in on, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to thank Representative Josephson for bringing this bill forward. I strongly support it. And, you know, last legislative session, we had a bill, Senate Bill 115, that made it to the 1 yard line, and because of the COVID, didn't quite cross into the end zone, which is where we thought we were going last year. So I'm really appreciative that this was brought up again. I support it. We need all of the the positions that are being lost at the SPAR division is a great concern to me. And I'm also on the board of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizen Advisory Council. And so that's where I'm getting a lot of my background. But this the SPAR division is very important to the whole state. And right now, a lot of the funding is being used to clean up like some of the PFAS contamination and some of the cleanup junkyards, and they're not recovering the SPAR division hasn't been successful at collecting for those cleanups. So that does come out of the SPAR budget, and it's a good thing that that budget is there. So anyway, I strongly encourage everyone to support House Bill 104. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haggerty. Just before you get off, can you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Oh, yeah. Mako Haggerty, and I'm from Homer, Alaska. I represent the Kenai Peninsula Borough on the Prince William Sound Regional Citizen Advisory Council.
Thank you very much. Mr. Haggerty, do you run the water taxi service there in Homer using your first name?
I sure do, and I'm in the process of running it right now as we speak.
Well, thank you very much. I've used your services many times down there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Next up, we have Robert Archibald. Mr. Archibald, please state your name and any affiliation for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Archibald. I'm from Homer. I'm currently the president of the board of directors of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, and I represent on that board the city of Homer. I would like to state my strong support for passage of HB 104. I concur with the statements and supports provided by Donna Schatz of the Prince William Sound Citizens Advisory Council. Again, my interest is in Section 5 of the bill. This bill, if passed, will provide a much-needed increased revenue for the 470 Fund, that the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Prevention and Response Fund, and the Spill Prevention and Response Division of DEC, SPAR. I've lived and worked in Alaska long before the Exxon Valdez and understand the reason for a strong and functioning SPAR division. Over recent years, SPAR division has experienced a reduction in funding and loss of positions. The revenue shortfall within the 470 fund diminishes the ability of the state to provide oil spill and hazardous substance release and maintain adequate level of readiness and adequately respond should an oil spill occur. The state needs a coordinated plan and a budget fund oversight and prevention, and to ensure the state's ability to oversee cleanup efforts if a major oil spill occurs. In addition, revenue sources. If additional revenue sources are not secured, the fund balance is projected to be in the red by 2014. The increased surcharge on refined fuel products contained within Section 5 of HB 104, which will go directly to the prevention account within the 470 fund, is sufficient to close the revenue gap and make SPAR self-sufficient into the future.
Mr. Archibald, you've reached about 2:15. If you could wrap up, please, that'd be much appreciated.
Sure, thank you. The state must be able to adequately engage the oil spill and hazardous substance release prevention activities and robustly respond to pollution if it occurs, which is critical to protecting the environment, economy, and health, safety, and welfare of Alaskans. That concludes my testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Archibald, for your testimony. Next up, we have Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, sir. My name is Mike Coons. I'm the president of the MAPSU chapter at AMAC Action, and we oppose HB 104. In testimony from Mr. Granlund last week, staffer for Representative Josephson, he said per DOT that the average mileage used for vehicles is 9,100 miles per year. I live in Palmer, and I work at J-Bear, so roughly 100 miles per day. I work 5 days a week, so that is not anywhere close to 9,100 miles per year. In fact, that is 24,000 miles per year. There are a lot of Valley residents that work in Anchorage, so that would range even higher for those that live in Wasilla, Big Lake, et cetera. He also said the average cost increase is about $40 a year. That, in fact, is not true. Nothing in this testimony even touched on the 10-cent per gallon tax increase by Anchorage on top of the 8-cent state tax. So the Anchorage driver would pay 26 cents per gallon in taxes. We oppose this not just because we oppose additional taxation, but because of the impact it will have specifically on seniors. Seniors who have retired are on a fixed income. So if this were to pass, my budget for fuel consumption will have to be altered and thus take money from other parts of my budget to pay for the increase. What is happening in this new White House, we already have seen almost a dollar a gallon increase at the pump. That's bad enough. Now Representative Josephson wants to harm our seniors and all Alaskans even more. As to electric cars, not sure how people recharge their cars in Anchorage, but if charging stations are used, why not tax electricity as well? Say 50 cents per kilowatt hour. Those are people that obviously can afford such a tax. Isn't taxation the left's means as to redistribution of wealth? Sadly, the leftist House will pass this out with full no votes by our conservative caucus. I and others will do all we can to kill this in the Senate. For the conservatives on this committee, we fully expect a no vote here and on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coons, for your testimony. Are there any questions? No, sir. So thank you very much, Mr. Coons. Next up, we have Joe Michelle with the Alaska Trucking Association. Mr. Michelle, please put yourself and your affiliation on the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Michelle. I'm the executive director here at the Alaska Trucking Association. ATA has supported the fuel tax increase in previous iterations of this bill, and we maintain our support of HB 104, specifically that it's provided that the money's raised goes solely to the maintenance of Alaskan roads.
Mr. Michelle, good to hear from you, but it's pretty hard to hear from you, so if you could speak up, it would be much appreciated.
Absolutely. We are testifying today just to show a little bit of concern on HB 104 in regards to maybe putting some sideboards on this bill. HB 104 addresses Alaska Statute 43-40-10, specifically parts A and B. That is the part that is proposing raising the fuel tax from 8 cents a gallon to 16 cents a gallon. In part G of the same statute, just a few paragraphs down, it lists what the motor fuel tax monies would be used for, and there's wording saying for the construction of highways, projects, ferries, including approaches, operances, related facilities, acquisitions of right-of-ways or easements, and other highway costs, including surveys, administration, and related matters. ETA feels this is an opportunity for placing some sideboards on HB 104 to ensure that the monies are specifically used for highway maintenance. I'm available for any questions. Otherwise, thank you for the committee's time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Michelle, for talking on behalf of the Alaska Trucking Association. Hope you're doing well. Any questions? It appears we have none. Thank you very much, Mr. Michelle, and look forward to seeing you soon, and thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Brittany Stompahar with the Alaska General Contractors, Associated General Contractors. Please proceed with your testimony and put your name and affiliation on the record as well.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hopkins. For the record, my name is Brittany Stompahar. I am the Government Relations Liaison for the Associated General Contractors of Alaska. AGC is the largest construction trade association in the state, representing over 620 Alaskan contractors, specialty contractors, suppliers, manufacturers, and businesses in Alaska. I am testifying today on their behalf to express our support for HB 104. The last time Alaska updated its motor fuel tax rate was over 50 years ago in 1970. For a long time, Alaska has had the lowest motor fuel tax rates in the nation, and this increase will only change that ranking slightly. Adjusting Alaska's motor fuel tax rates will take a meaningful and reasonable step toward our ability to fund the state's backlog of transportation infrastructure and maintenance needs, along with improving our state's general fiscal stability. This increase is good for our industry and good for Alaska. It will have a positive effect on our businesses, the families we employ, and the safety of Alaskans who depend on the infrastructure we build and maintain. AGC has long supported a fuel tax increase, and we appreciate the leadership of Representative Josephson on this issue and the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 104. Thank you, Chair Hopkins.
Thank you, Ms. Stompahar, and congratulations on your recent nuptials. I'll have to learn that new name.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for the Associated General Contractors? It appears there are not. Thank you very much, and say hello to Fairbanks for me. Next up, we have Edith McKee. Please, Ms. McKee, put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello. Thank you, Representative Josephson and the House Transportation Committee. My name is Edith McKee, and I represent HDR Alaska, and we are calling to offer our support for HB 104 and the efforts to maintain Alaska's infrastructure by increasing the state motor fuel tax revenues. Alaska boasts 5,635 centerline miles of roads, highways, and the largest aviation system in North America. Since 2014, the Alaska Department of Transportation, Highway and Aviation Maintenance and Operations budget has been cut by as much as 20%. Operational needs currently exceed proposed budget allocations for highways and aviation. Impacts from these M&O shortfalls have impacted safety and communities across Alaska. Across the nation, 31 states have raised the state motor fuel tax since 2013 in recognition that states must now lead funding of their transportation infrastructure. While many states fund 75% of the transportation spending, Alaska funds a mere 10% of our transportation spending. And as a former DOT employee, it's often the maintenance and operations division that first has layoffs, that first receives budget cuts, because so much of highway design and construction is funded through federal dollars. I appreciate your time and the opportunity to provide testimony in support of HB 104. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKee. Are there any questions? It appears not. Thank you for your time today. And next up, we have Bert Hofteling. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Bert Hofteling, and I represent myself and basically all of the middle-class Alaskans out there that are not fortunate enough to work at those high-paying jobs, but do have to do a lot of commuting back and forth.
Sir, if you could speak up loudly into your phone, much appreciated, so that we could hear you in the committee and for the record.
Okay. Just one second here.
That's already better. Thank you.
Did this help?
Yes, sir.
All right. My name is Bert Hofteling, and I'm calling for myself and all the Alaskans out there that don't have the ability to even know that this is going on. We commute basically on a daily basis. There's 100,000 of us that work in the valley and travel to Anchorage, and just the increase of the 10 cents that Anchorage had done on all of us for purchasing our fuel there, it made it so that it was actually cheaper for the first time in a long time to be able to purchase the gas in the valley, and we were saving ourselves. Now here in the middle of a pandemic, when we have the largest majority of Alaskans that are still without work, trying to recover, trying to get their rents caught back up in current, trying to get their bills back to where they were before this all happened, and now you want to increase the fuel tax. It's just disproportional and wrong timing for a discussion like this to be happening, and I'm completely against this bill being passed. I think Mike Coons knocked it out of the ballpark in his testimony earlier today, describing the impacts that this is going to have on Alaskans, and I really hope you reconsider this for a different time, and today is just not that time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Are there any questions for the presenter? Not at this time. So thank you very much, sir, for your testimony. And at this point, seeing nobody else, is that correct that there's nobody else online? All right, we're good to go, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you very much. At this time, I'd love to have the bill sponsor and staff come back forward to the mic, and if there's any closing comments or questions for the bill sponsor at this time. I see no questions. Any closing comments, Mr. Grabman?
Yes, please. For the record, my name is Nathaniel Grabman, staff to Representative Josephson. And should I get closer or further from this for feedback? Yeah, okay. Not to belabor the point, but I think most of the pro views have already been stated, so I'm not going to go into that too much. Two of the callers said that they were commuters from the Mat-Su borough and raised concerns about the additional costs which would be associated with this bill were it to pass. I recently received a document from Dave Hansen, who is the former economic development director for the Mat-Su borough. He had indicated that he wanted to participate in the public comment today, but he had a scheduling conflict. In it, he goes through some assumptions as far as the math, and basically the punchline to this is that a potential commuter from the Mat-Su would be looking at around a little over $100 in extra cost per year. I'm not disputing that. At the same time, the more you drive, the more wear and tear you're going to put on the roads. And he also pointed out that there are some compensating factors which may work in that situation. For example, the average Mat-Su home costs roughly $78,000 less than the average home in Anchorage. And the average job, or the average earner in Anchorage, has a higher per capita income. So there are trade-offs here, obviously, and just something to think about.
Thank you, Mr. Grabman. Any questions on that, Mr. McCabe?
I'd love to see his data on that.
Absolutely.
I'm sure if he made those statements and if he's the guy that you say he is, he has data to back it up. I drive that. It's a 150-mile round trip for me, and I can tell you right now that it's not $100 a year. It might be $100 a month, and frankly, my home is just as expensive as some in Anchorage. So I think it's disingenuous to sort of park the argument there. So if you have data that you can send to us or he has the data, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you much, Mr. Grabman. If you could send that to the committee chair, and I'd be happy to share it out. Any further questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Kronk.
It's got a statement. I'm confused on the value of a home in Anchorage versus the valley, how this relates to this bill. Thank you.
Hopefully that information will be in there as we share it out. So thank you very much, Mr. Kronk, Representative Kronk. Do we at this time, any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Grabman, for your closing comments there. At this point, I'd like to feel the will of the committee. If we would like to move the bill, if there's a motion, or if we would like to hold on to it for another day. Brief at ease. Yep. All right, we are back on the record. Sorry about that. Representative Hannon?
Chair Hopkins, I move to advance House Bill 104, version 32, LS0444/A from committee with attached individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
All right, thank you. We have an objection from Representative McCabe. Let's see, would you like to speak to your objection, Mr. McCabe, or Representative McCabe?
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So I think that we've had public testimony here, 2, 5, 7, 9 people, and 7 of them were either 2 state entities and the rest were large entities that are obviously looking to mitigate their costs on the backs of people that drive. I think 100,000 a day is wrong. I think it's closer to 50,000 a day that drive the Glen Highway between the Mat-Su and Anchorage, and some of them as far north as Talkeetna. I think we need to give them another chance for public testimony and maybe advertise this a little bit more. Not sure too many people knew about this. So I love that we have invited public testimony. Obviously, the seven that testified from the sort of larger entities, SPAR and such, were all keyed to the testimony by Representative Josephson and his team, and I appreciate that. But none of the other no other public has been able to testify, so I'd like to hold it over until Thursday and invite further public testimony, or until the next time we meet and invite further public testimony. Thank you.
Understood on that, Representative McCabe. Thank you. It will go on to House Finance, of course, where there'll be many of the other opportunities for public testimony there. Do you maintain your objection still?
I do.
All right, thank you. At this point, Mr. Buehner, would you please call the roll? Brief it easy. Deidre? Sorry, Ms. Buehner, would you please call the roll for passage of the bill?
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Sponholt.
Yes.
Chair Hopkins.
Yes.
Totals are 4 yes, 3 no.
Thank you very much, Ms. Buehner. And with a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, House Bill 104 passes from committee onto House Finance. We will now go at ease while members have the opportunity to sign the committee report. A note for scheduling this week, we will be meeting on Thursday and Saturday of this week. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 18th at 1:30 p.m. To hear the Department of Transportation on vessel replacement and repair at the Alaska for the Alaska Marine Highway System, as well as continue our work on House Bill 63, Representative Stute's Ferry Operations Bill. Mm-hmm. Please note that any committee amendments for House Bill 63 are due on my desk by noon on Wednesday, tomorrow, March 17th. Mm-hmm. Our Saturday hearing will be at 12:30 p.m. in this room, Barnes 124. Are there any questions at this time? So, hearing none, we're going to go ahead and adjourn the committee today at 2:29 p.m.